Welcome to episode 105 of Speaking of Mysteries. This is Nancy Clare, and today we're speaking to Ingrid Thoft, whose fourth Fina Ludlow novel, Duplicity, is having its pub day today, January 10th, 2017. I can't imagine anyone who has read any of the previous three Fina novels, Loyalty, Identity, and Brutality, not wanting to catch up with Fina's most recent case, which, in Duplicity, includes investigating a megachurch in the making and her own brother, Rand. There are plenty of surprises along the way, because that's how Fina rolls. Here's Ingrid Thoft. Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. This is Nancy Clare, and I am delighted that Ingrid Thoft is able to join us the week before her next Fina Ludlow novel, Duplicity, is due to be published. Welcome, Ingrid.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So it's been about a year and a half since we last spoke, and that was for Brutality. Mm-hmm. And I'm completely enthralled with Fina, as I know many other people are. Mm-hmm. And before we start talking about Duplicity, I want to talk a little bit about her. So one of the things I most appreciate about her is she's not cute. And by that, I don't mean she isn't attractive. She obviously is. I mean, she's serious about her job.
Yes. Yes. Fina is, she's a grown-up woman, and she takes her job very seriously, and it's an important part of her identity. And I think that that's something that a lot of people respond to positively with the books, because they like to see anyone who's competent and who's committed to their job. But I think it's especially refreshing to have a female investigator who's doing that.
Right. She isn't doing this for fun or because she fell into it. She's doing this for
a living.
I think
part of she's doing it for a living, and I think she is this interesting person or character in that she has found what she's very good at and that she's able to be paid to do it, which is always a treat, and that it's an avenue for her to explore things that matter to her and actually kind of promote things that matter to her. So thinking about women and children and speaking for people who don't necessarily have a voice. And I think it's very powerful when a person finds the right match for their talents, and I can't remember that specific quote about what the world needs and your talents, and putting that together is kind of a positive, perfect storm. And I think that that's what is the case with Fina.
And in Fina's case, you know, she doesn't hesitate to get involved, and by extension, you, since you are her creator, doesn't hesitate to get involved in some of society's sort of third rail issues. And in the case of Duplicity, it's predatory organized religion. Fina's father, just to set it up, Fina's father, Carl, with whom she has a conflicted relationship, to say the least, and we'll talk more about that in a minute, has asked her to investigate the church that a young woman, who happens to be the daughter of an old flame of Carl's, wants to make a huge contribution to. And adding to the mystery, of course, is that Carl has told her not to be concerned with how much she spends, which is very unlike her father. But let's talk about that sort of third rail predatory religion.
Okay. Well, first of all, I love that term. I think I'm going to have to start borrowing that term. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, please. I give it to you.
I love the idea of the third rail.
Oh, I wish I had invented that, but I think that comes from political speak of Social Security as the third rail of politics.
So. Okay. Well, I think that's a perfect term, and I think that how that begins for me is that I have to find something I am engaged with in terms of a kind of the third rail topic in the book, and I always want to have a third rail topic, and it has to be something that I think is interesting and fascinating and that raises a lot of questions. Because that's what I try to do, is raise a lot of questions and allow readers who are coming from so many different perspectives to kind of ponder them through their own lens. The religious piece of it for me was that I had done some research about some of these kind of mega churches. And if you ever are, say, at the gym on the treadmill mid-morning, you flip through the channels, and a lot of them are these extraordinarily successful preachers and pastors, both men and women, who have built empires, essentially. And the church in duplicity isn't an empire at this point, but I was fascinated by this question of religious belief and faith and what happens when very, you know, human aspects come into that. So what happens when you have people who aren't actually deserving of your faith, or what happens when you have people who have their own agenda? So I like kind of looking at that. And I do think it's interesting, especially now when we're in a time where people are talking about, well, what's true and what isn't and what do you believe, that this is kind of a neat little, you know, microcosm, the story that I've done in the book.
So, yes, you know, that makes me think. It's sort of like you talk about these empires, these megachurch empires, mm-hmm. and what you're looking at is the potential embryonic empire, you know, the origin story of a of a Jim and Tammy Baker.
Exactly. And how does that kind of bloom and flourish? And the other thing that I found interesting when I was doing the research was there was a case in Seattle where a church had kind of imploded, and that was evangelical, and because of issues with the leadership. And I went on a lot of message boards, and I looked at a lot of forums online, and what struck me was that the members of this church, they were devastated, and they felt betrayed, and it wasn't just like any organization or club that, you know, falls apart. This was something that was central to their lives and to their belief systems. And it really shook a lot of these people to the core. So I thought that that was really interesting. You know, I'm not particularly religious myself. I wasn't raised to be a churchgoer. So I haven't had that personal experience, but it was very eye-opening to me to see what an important role organized religion plays in a lot of people's lives. And the influence it can have is really kind of, it can be scary, actually.
So as Fina peels back the layers of the church mm-hmm. in the story, naturally unsavory bits are exposed, including people and acts. And then there's a murder of a prominent church member. And mm-hmm. Fina doesn't jump to conclusions, though. Although her inclination may be to do so, but she's able to stop herself. And I always mm-hmm. find that very interesting. She's really, as you said, she knows what she's good at, but she really has a lot of self-control.
Well, it's interesting. I think that's true. And I think part of it is because I think that that is what a good investigator should do. They should be able to acknowledge whatever their bias is or where they're coming from and kind of put that aside. And so despite her not having much history with organized religion, like me, she didn't want to jump to the conclusion that this group was somehow responsible. I think the other piece of it that's interesting is that Fina is from a family that is disparaged at times, you know, that people don't think well of often. And so I think that being on the receiving end of that makes her a little hesitant to always jump to the conclusions about someone else. She knows what it's like to have people talk about her family in a negative way when they don't necessarily have the whole story. And I think that that informs the way she investigates cases.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned her family because it's mm-hmm. a brilliant segue. Fina's investigation of Covenant Rising Church, which is the name of the mm-hmm. organization, isn't her only case in duplicity. She's actually assigned herself a personal mission, which is investigating her brother Rand, mm-hmm. who's not a good guy. Yeah. He's returned to Boston. Right. And what I liked was, mm-hmm. as she's driving, she equates her fixation to his return like a barnacle to a rock.
Yeah.
And in her investigation
That's my New England influence coming through.
Although I think there are barnacles on the West Coast, too.
Probably, yes.
And in her investigation of Rand, she has this is a place where she has no trouble mm-hmm. assuming a worst-case scenario. Yep. And you know, but Fina's life can be complicated during an investigation. Mm-hmm. She's got her usual romantic back and forth. Mm-hmm. But she's also started to receive threatening letters and learns mm-hmm. that someone has put a contract out on her, not to kill her, but to put her mm-hmm. in the hospital. So I'm just wondering, you know, that her family, as you just mentioned, is disparaged from time mm-hmm. to time, but sometimes she's part of the disparagement. No one's harsher on Rand than Fina.
Yes, I that's absolutely true. And I think that that came from when I first started writing the series and I did research into abuse within families, which is a theme that runs through it. It was really fascinating to me how people respond in family units to accusations of abuse, and that some people are very willing to believe a child or an adult who says they were abused, and then other people, as I've created in the Ludlows, want none of it, and they absolutely don't believe it. And I think that this is my little jab where I'm kind of saying, you know, and this is part of what you get to do as a writer, is kind of think about those issues that are important to you, to illuminate that dynamic and to show that dynamic. And I have heard from people who are victims of abuse, I've heard from victim advocates who say, we really appreciate the way you've presented this, because people kind of don't believe that there is such disagreement within families, and yet it happens all the time.
Fina is resolute in her, and unequivocal in her opinion of Rand, and in her protection of Rand's daughter, Haley. Her brothers, though, Scott and Matthew, you know, who love Haley, seem squishier on, and that's the only word that can come to mind, on how to deal with Rand.
That's a
they know he's a bad guy.
That's a very good word.
Pardon me?
I think that's a perfect word to describe them. I think squishy is a great way to look at it, because they are not as resolute as she is. And, you know, in some respects, it's because they are more business-wise, they are more tied up in the family firm than she is. She has a little more independence. I don't, you know, is it because they're men also and that they have a different perspective on it? But I think that they do represent what a lot of people experience. I mean, when people say to me, well, I'm not sure if this is really what happens, I say, you know, why don't you read the paper? Because the Catholic Church, Penn State, there are all these examples where people have known about abuse, and they're not bad people, but they have responded in ways that in retrospect seem kind of reprehensible. So I think that that dynamic's really interesting. And I do think that the brothers, and part of what happens in Duplicity is Fina kind of saying, look, you got to pick a side here. You got to, you know, choose a lane and stay in it. And that that creates some real angst within the family.
And it definitely, I mean, she figures that Rand is up to no good in more ways than just wanting to keep him away from either the daughter of his girlfriend in Florida, which at the end of the last book she called and warned his girlfriend about his proclivities, and sort of ongoing, and you know, Matthew's girlfriend has a young daughter, and I mean she's Fina's on a mission to save the world from Rand, and she's sort of an army of one.
Well, I think one thing that's interesting about her character is that she sees and acknowledges things. You know, when she gets a piece of information, she doesn't unknow it because it's painful or it's difficult. And I think that part of what's funny is that she's been raised to be very independent and very strong, and yet I don't think Carl had this in mind. You know, she's kind of, it's when you raise an independent child and then they move across the world, you know, that may be not exactly what you were going for. And I think that that has backfired a little for Carl. But I think that she can't unsee things, and that some people are able to compartmentalize and kind of think, well, I don't want to go there. And Fina's not able to do that. And sometimes that's a problem for her. You know, sometimes she can't stop thinking about this issue, and so it really, you know, is very disruptive to her. But I think that she just, the idea that kind of anyone else will be abused by her brother on her watch is intolerable to her.
Well, back to the case that she's investigating for Chloe, the young woman who has become enmeshed in this church and has found a home in this church. You know, Fina, in a way, identifies with her. And at least that was my perception, that she identifies with someone who's a bit at sea, looking for mm-hmm. a place to belong. Fina has found this work, which she, as you described, she enjoys and defines mm-hmm. her as a person. And Chloe yep. is looking for a similar thing. And yet, you know, as she goes through the investigation of the church and mm-hmm. as she finds out these other things, it's interesting that you pointed out that she can't unsee things, because mm-hmm. the resolution of the murder
yeah.
is surprising. And we won't mm-hmm. say anything as a spoiler, but yeah. I think she comes upon that because she remembers and can't unsee something, yeah. even bits and facts mm-hmm. that don't match. She doesn't try to mush everything into the narrative yep. she wants.
Yep. I think that that's true. And I think that she has a very open mind to people's experiences. And I think that this is true of good investigators, whether they're private detectives or work in law enforcement, is that there's an empathy for other people, and there's a willingness to kind of hear what their story has been, and that makes her very good at what she does. She doesn't come to the case or to any case with a narrative already. She leaves that open. And I think that with Chloe, she does relate to her, and she knows that navigating, you know, what your parents want for you versus you becoming your own person can be very difficult. I mean, I think people struggle with that their whole lives. So I think that that's something that people also really relate to with Fina, is that we're all always trying to figure out who's our family and how do we fit in with our family, and, you know, what is, do we choose kind of a go with our family of origin but then add to that as we get older? And anyone who goes home for the holidays knows it's easy for people to fall into their roles, though, even if they haven't been living with their siblings for 20 years. So I think that those are things that people that really resonates with readers.
And we should mention that that you come by much of this knowledge about investigators honestly. Mm-hmm. You pursued a certificate in investigation at the University yes. of Washington. Mm-hmm. So you're not making it up as you go along.
No, I'm not. And I mean, I loved that program. It's a fantastic program. And one of the reasons I took it was that I decided I was going to write a professional sleuth, and I really wanted to know the basics. And I always say that Fina does break rules and makes her own rules, but she doesn't do it from a place of incompetency. She does it from a place of making a choice. And I think that's really important, that she's not floundering, or she's not, you know, she makes mistakes, obviously, but she doesn't decide to take a particular route because she doesn't know any better. So I really loved that program. I thought it was fascinating. I've also done a ride-along with the Seattle cops. I've been to the morgue. I've been to the gun range with the Seattle cops. And I've tried to do other, you know, kinds of research that just gives me a sense of the world I'm trying to portray. And plus, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I have to admit it. It's been great fun. But it's another component of the research that I do in general.
And Fina does have... I was looking at the back of the book, of the copy, mm-hmm. and she has, I sort of disagree with, adjectives like scrappy, because to mm-hmm. me that equates it to cute, but I think yep. prickly is definitely, mm-hmm. an adjective that can be associated with Fina. She's very good at her job, but she has conflicted relationships. She has conflicted relationship with her on-again, off-again boyfriend, who is yeah. a cop. And let's just talk yeah. about her relationship with Carl. I mean, really.
Okay.
She's, I mean, that's, you know, I have a feeling that the end of Duplicity sets up your next book.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl is a source of surprise, a never-ending source of surprise for Fina. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that it's interesting, actually. Someone wrote to me and said, oh, Carl reminds me so much of my father. And I thought, oh, goodness, that's not great. But but she really loved the book, which was a good thing. I think that he is a source of surprise for Fina. I think that parents are sources of surprise for their kids, as we all age. You know, I think kids think of their parents as just existing as mom and dad, and then as they get older, they're like, oh, wow, you're a person. You have experiences. You have a world or a life that is somewhat separate from being my parent. So I think that Fina is undergoing that experience. But I think that they have an extraordinarily complicated relationship, which is not terribly unusual. She's the only girl in the family. She did have a sister who died at a very young age before Fina was even born. And she's the youngest. And so that creates a very interesting dynamic for in a family that's fairly, you know, masculine and, you know, can be sexist at times, although she's always kind of butting up against that. But I think it's a lot of fun to write those Athena and Carl. I really enjoy writing those interactions because I've had such a strong sense of the two characters.
Well, it shows. I mean, and I think probably one of the realizations that Fina will undergo is that she's not terribly mm-hmm. unlike Carl in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, her...
I think that's true. And I think it's also interesting for me to think about the prickly part. You know, she doesn't suffer any fools. I mean, that's certainly a personality trait. But on the other hand, she also can be very compassionate and is very concerned with other people's experiences. You know, sometimes I wonder when I see reviews that refer to her with words like prickly, I think, is this because she's a woman and she's not behaving the way you want her to? And I don't know the answer to that, but I've never seen male sleuths referred to as being, you know, prickly or scrappy, for that matter.
Well, scrappy to me is...
I mean, can you imagine, you know, someone being... a man being referred to as scrappy? I don't... a child might be, but certainly not a man, I don't think.
I could see... There are male investigators that get... that mm-hmm. I could see described as prickly. To me, that...
Yeah.
Okay. I don't associate that with a particularly... You know, how about does not play well with others?
I think... does not play well with some others. I think that's how I would describe it. Because I do think she plays well with some people. You know, she's very invested in her niece and nephews, and she is invested in helping people who she feels are being mistreated or underrepresented. But yeah, she doesn't, there are people she doesn't play well with. She doesn't really care what other people think. And I think that that is limiting in some ways and very freeing in other ways.
I'm sure I'm not the first to say something like this, but Fina is in a way the heir apparent to Sue Grafton's Kinsey Millhone. And mm-hmm. how would Fina feel about that? And how do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, when I hear that, it's kind of blows my mind in a positive way because I love Sue Grafton and I love Kinsey and I have always read those books. And it kind of actually gives me goosebumps, to be honest, to even be compared or included in that same sentence. So that makes me happy. I'm thrilled by that. In terms of Fina, I think that she wouldn't have a problem with that. I mean, I think that she, if I think of those two characters together, I think they get along quite well. They're both prickly, and they both, you know, play well with some, but not with all, and I think have crazy diets. So I think that they would be actually a good match. You know, they're in different decades. That would be a bit of a problem. But I think that Fina respects people who are good at their jobs. That's something that is important to her. You know, she does not respect people who aren't competent or who don't try or who don't put in an effort. And I think Kinsey certainly does.
Well, maybe on some astral plane they can...
yes. With VI, yeah. I think that I like that idea.
So what's next for Fina? Where are we going from Duplicity? We've had Brutality, and in which she investigated head injuries in sports and...
Yeah.
Meg, now we've investigated organized predatory religion mm-hmm. in Duplicity. Where are we going? What's the next word?
So, well, I'm not revealing the next word yet. I do have a story. I know where she's going. You know, I'm still working out some details. I'm also, though, working on a standalone at the moment. So
exciting.
That will be a mini break from Fina. And I imagine that's going to come out before the next FINA book does, but I don't know the exact timing yet. But I've started the next FINA book, and I don't want to talk about what the issue is, but it's something, you know, it's more of her looking at something that's complicated and nuanced and kind of getting embroiled in the middle of it. And yes, there are a lot, you know, the family issues will continue. Those they're not all going to sit around and sing Kumbaya together, I can tell you that much.
Well, talk a little bit about your standalone, because I know that my partner in Speaking of Mysteries, Les Klinger, mm-hmm. often talks to writers about their series, about the tyranny of the series. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. we want do whatever you did last time, mm-hmm. only different.
Yep. Right, exactly. Well, yeah, it's an interesting kind of conundrum to be in. It's a great one. I mean, the fact that people like your series and want you to write more is fantastic, and I think any writer would be pleased with that. But there is kind of a tyranny to it, because people want the same but different. They want you to change things up but not too much, because that kind of upsets the apple cart. So that the series provides its own set of challenges, but it also has some great things to it, because you have a whole universe created already, and you have this cast of characters, and you know a lot of them really well. So the standalone, I'm not really talking about the subject matter yet, but I will tell you that it is centered around family, because that is what I hear from readers, the piece of it they really like is the family relationships, and it's a mystery, and there is a murder in it, but that piece of how different family members interact in extreme circumstances, I think that's really interesting. So it's been an interesting challenge. I mean, it's been very different for me. I've kind of stepping away from FINA. It was funny. My mom said to me, "Oh, well, I'm going to miss FINA." And I said, "Well, you know, she is right here in one form or another." I said, "She's not actually going away." But so it's kind of exciting. But it's it's a challenge.
Well, and then the last question I want to ask you actually gets away mm-hmm. a little bit from your books and a little bit more towards the community of crime fiction writers. Mm-hmm. You mention at the end of your book and your acknowledgments, your friendship, and I mm-hmm. follow you on Twitter, and I know that you and Ace Atkins and mm-hmm. Reed Farrell Coleman are great pals, and you follow yep. each other, and you're all fantastic writers, but your subjects mm-hmm. and your characters are so different. So mm-hmm. I wanted to know if you wanted to talk about your friendship with them and mm-hmm. the common ground that you find and how you reconcile the differences.
Well,
oh, and David Joy, one of my favorite new
I love
authors.
David.
Oh my God!
Oh, and he couldn't be a nicer, more delightful person. One of the things that I discovered when I became published and then started to go to conferences is that the community of mystery writers, it's a fantastic community. People are supportive. They, you know, reach out to give you a hand. They offer advice. And, of course, you know, people they're competing and that everyone's trying to sell books. But there's never, to me, that sense of if you do well, I don't. It's definitely more of an infinite pie. So I feel like I've just been incredibly fortunate to have met Ace and Reed in particular, because they're fellow Putnam authors. And Putnam, I feel like, is also a very special place. There are some amazing writers, and people are supportive of one another. And very early on, the two of them, you know, said, if you need anything, if you need some advice. So our friendship isn't so much based upon what we write, but it's more about being mystery writers. You know, Ace and I have in common that we both write a series one of his series is in Boston. But it's really about just who we are as people. They're just great people, and they're fun to be with. But they're great. They give me advice. You know, I had an agent change because my agent had passed away, and it was going to be now with Ace's agent. And I wrote him an email and said, hey, this is what's happening. And he said, okay, I'm calling you tomorrow, and we're going to talk about this. And he gave me advice about, you know, the different ins and outs. And that was incredibly valuable to me. And he didn't have to do that. He writes two books a year. He's a busy guy. So I think that there's that willingness to help other writers that is really a kind of a hallmark of this community. And I, in turn, try to then reach out to people and be supportive in any way that I can. David is just a fantastic person, and he had an event in Seattle. And he arrived just, you know, David lives out kind of in the middle of nowhere. So he arrived in Seattle after having done, you know, a fairly lengthy tour, and he was just spent. And he said to me, can you just come get me at the hotel? I can't deal with any cabs. I can't deal with, you know, figuring out Uber. And so I came and got him. And I always talk about how he's the country mouse and I'm the city mouse. But we all love writing. And we love reading. And I think that that is just, I mean, that's an incredibly strong bond. And I just, they're great guys, and they're a lot of fun. They have great senses of humor. They don't take themselves too seriously. To me, it's been one of the amazing kind of surprises and delights of having a career in this area, that I feel like I don't just have colleagues, but that I also have some great friends. I learned from them also. One other point is that I do actually, you know, I learned from them. I was reading Ace's most recent Quinn Colson book, and I love that series. I'm in love with Quinn Colson, which I've told Ace. And I love the way Ace manages time in his books. You know, he does not follow a strict linear layout in terms of, and then this happened, and then this happened. You know, he'll have a chapter devoted to a day, and then 2 weeks will go by. And that's not as easy to do as people might think. And when you do it well, it reads so well. So there are things like that where I think, okay, I can learn from that. I can read him and be a fan and think, well, how can I incorporate this into my own work?
Ingrid, thanks again. I know you're about to go out on a tour. And so congratulations on that. Well, thank you again for taking the time. I know you must be very, very busy.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure, and it's always fun to talk about books with someone who loves to read them.